I'm John.
And I'm Ron.
And I'm Jason. And this is Digital Divination on the No Direction Network.
All right, and we are back for episode 134 of Digital Divination.
Yeah. Oh,
I was waiting. Was big... But there's
me
a gap.
Too.
What's good? Ron, where are you? Oh.
Wait, who?
Yes, exactly. Ron can't make it tonight. I don't know if he's tending with the chickens or the children or some combination. Man, I saw the chicks like last week.
Oh,
and
nice.
They went from being really tiny to now they're just growing so fast. So.
Oh, that's what happened. They grow up so fast. They do.
I know.
Soon they'll be going to college.
Yes. But so Ron can't make it tonight, unfortunately. But, you know, this is the first time in a while. It's just been me and you.
Yeah. I guess I should say that my opinions are not also not the opinions of the Wizards of the Coast. I mean, it's always been the case forever. But yes. I should just, you know, make it clear now.
Yeah. Well, you know, my opinions are my own, and they are not Paizo's or Wizards of the Coast. And I am in no way endorsing anything that trying to make it seem like it belonged to any of them. So anything I say is just me.
Yes, good. So you're not endorsing some of the stuff we're talking about today? You're not excited about it at all?
Oh, no, I am super excited about it. But
oh, sounds like an endorsement.
I'm not. Well, okay. I am not saying Forget it. Okay. Speaking of exciting stuff that we're talking about. So a bunch of information has come out since our last episode.
Yeah.
Including Galaxy Guide.
Yeah.
Got my copy, my official copy. I only have the digital copy now. I don't have the hard copy. Yeah. That's like in the mail. But they don't give you the digital copy as soon as they ship a hard copy.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so
I did get my digital copy like a couple weeks ago for sure.
Yeah, I know, but you don't get hard copy like till like after everybody. Though,
yeah,
right?
No, I don't. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's true.
Especially now that they have to mail it to you. You can't just get it, you know, dropped on your desk.
Yeah.
I used to, back when there was a Paizo headquarters, Scott used to, I had my stuff was delivered to Scott. And then.
Oh.
When I met him, because I was in weekly games with him, he would just bring it to my house. I didn't have to pay shipping. And now that we don't have an office, I have to pay like postage like everybody else. No longer special.
You know. Yeah, we've got to make some money on these books somehow.
No, it's postage. You guys don't make money off postage.
Yeah, you're fair enough.
The government makes money off postage.
Well, the government's got to make money off our books somehow.
Yes. So, but... Galaxy Guide's out.
Yeah.
And on, this past week, also the playtest for Mechanic and Technomancer came out, which I am really, really, we had a game today and I had a bunch of Starfinder nerds with me and I told them, man, I am so excited. These are like such well-built classes. I am super excited. They are like so good. I'm like, I'm really stoked, especially I'm really stoked for the mechanic. Super stoked for the mechanic. Yeah. Yeah.
Well,
anyway, so that came out.
Yeah.
And also Alex did another episode of the Starfinder Society as the world turns kind of stuff. All the drama for the changes.
Good.
So some cool things in there. But because we don't have Ron today, I'm gonna say let's just talk about two of these things.
All right. Do you have an idea of which two?
Well, I think the playtest and the society. And then when Ron gets here, then hopefully next time, then we can talk about Galaxy Guide. Because that's like a lot. That's like should be a whole episode by itself anyway.
Yeah. Fair enough. And you'll be able to give him a copy of a book. So by then. And
I hope so. Yeah, me or his wife. Heaven forbid, he might even buy one, but generally, yeah. Okay. Anyway, so you have seen these things. You've seen these playtest characters. before, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I actually did a little bit of work on helping them play test. It's doing the alpha play tests, like a month or two ago. I've been pretty interested and excited about these since then as well. And for getting them to the, you know, I gave them some design suggestions, but they took, you know, they don't need to listen to me because I'm not on the Starfinder team. But other than that, you know, I was just had a good time. I made a technomancer, pattern. I don't know if you're familiar with, the video game Watch Dogs. It's like a game about hacking. It's like an open world game about hacking. Basically.
Oh, that makes sense. Yeah.
And I just named that character after the organization, which is DedSec, like Dead Sector.
Oh yeah.
I was like, yeah, I'm cool. I'm in. I was ready to do all my cool hacking catchphrases. It was fun.
And did you say all those cool hacking?
I did. Maybe I think I did. I think I got one in. I think I got one. It was mainly just sort of like testing some combat stuff and, you know, really ironing out some rough patches in the core chassis.
Yeah.
Well, I probably did too much background for a character that I was playing for like 2 hours at work.
Oh yeah.
And sort of a bare bones playtest.
Yeah. It's funny. So we're playing in a campaign now that Ron was running, and I'm playing a barbarian named Fessick. So yes. I'm just always doing Princess Bride stuff the whole time. And whenever I see the opportunity, I'm, you know, dropping a line in there. And it's just a lot of fun because everybody kind of knows the IP, so it all fits in. But it's a long-running campaign, so I'm trying to get everything in there. But for a playtest, definitely. Well, let's talk about the Technomancer since you've had some experience with it. I've read through both of these. I'll say probably the mechanic a little bit more closely, but the Technomancer does have some cool stuff. And I'll say I've played several mechanics in Starfinder First Edition, but only one Technomancer, and some call him Tim. Mm-hmm. So anyway.
There you go. Yeah. It was always sort of the thing about the first edition Technomancer that it didn't feel different enough from basically being a space wizard. And this new version definitely like really leans into, I think, this is what got me kind of excited about it, really leans into the tech part of it too, right? Like, so you basically have magic and you can put magic into your tech equipment, you know, but when you cast a spell, you kind of cycle it in and then uncycle it out. It's got a nice sort of, yin and yang with working with spells.
Yeah, it's a synergy. It's a synergy there, right?
That's the word.
That we didn't quite see before. It was, you know, even though, you know, there was hybrid equipment, hybrid stuff in first edition, but the Technomancer seemed less hybrid and more discreet, had tech, had magic, but they didn't really blend really super well. Whereas here, it kind of very intentionally tries to build in several kind of, or three actually, different ways that the magic can blend in with the technology.
I think it's four technically.
Is it four? Well,
there's four programming language, and each of these programming languages deals with a different kind of type of tech gear.
Right, right.
Weapons, see, now, armor. See,
I thought it was just
minions. The last one is this spell gem focus.
Oh yeah,
thing, right?
Yeah, I thought the names of the languages were kind of interesting. Right,
it's good. It's good. Yeah, second edition sort of wink and nod.
I know
kind of stuff.
Well, even the first, you know, DPS++, you know, the first one, Of course, with DPS, it's going to be for
weapons.
Weapons.
Doing damage. Yeah. Doing damage. Exactly.
Right. And then Fortran. Have you ever had to program in Fortran before?
No. No, I don't. I haven't done. It's not 100% true. Very occasionally write programs in BASIC. You all remember BASIC.
Yes. I learned to program in Fortran. So
there you go.
Yeah, so I learned BASIC and Fortran, but yeah, so and the premier language began as Abaddon Core standard for heat sinks and hostile environments. So basically this is for adapting to Yeah. Adapting to environments for armor and stuff.
Does armor stuff. I probably sure the fort is probably for stands for fortitude. Or fortification. Oh, yeah. Fortification, maybe. Yeah.
Right. Oh, right. Yeah. The third one I missed was servo shell. That's right. Yes. Yeah. Originally developed by a thrifty university student building their own coffee serving mini bot. Right. And then, and this one here is for the minion, right? The summon bot, creatures, things like that. With computers.
Or if you, you know, if you get a robot companion, possibly, you know, like we'll talk about with the mechanic.
Right. Right. So that one. And then Viper, which is, again, a twist on Python.
Coming, right? Kinda. Coming to Vipe the Windows.
Yes. What?
Yeah. You're not familiar with that old G.I. Joe cartoon?
No.
The one episode of G.I. Joe? Where they get G.I. Joe. Okay. Where's Ryan when you need him? I know. So G.I. Joe gets a phone call, and it's basically this voice says, I am the Viper. I will be coming tomorrow. And they're like, who's the Viper? And they do all this stuff. They're like, go. They keep calling back, but they're all like, Cobra's onto us. This something's happening. They're going to, who this Viper is going to think. And they like bust up a bunch of Cobra stuff that they had no knowledge of what was going on. They like break into like a Cobra base and just stuff. And then they comes back. And at the end of the episode, the Viper shows up and he's here to vipe the windows. And it's just, he's just a window wiper with an accent. And that's the whole joke. Yeah. That's like,
okay.
And that's like a first season episode too. It's not like they were running out of ideas.
Yeah, no, that's good. That's really good. Okay, now I get that. So,
yeah.
All right, developed by.
But no, you're right. This is based on Python.
Yeah, ASPIS Consortium to standardize the manufacturing of hybrid items, especially spell chips and spell gems, right? So this is the spell cache stuff related things, right? Programming. Anyway, what's interesting about all these, so all these are just, so you have different languages, and then each of these languages has several different things you can do with them, right? So each of them has...
Yeah, basically, yeah.
Yeah, the spell cache, magic hacks, spell shapes, overclocking, and in jailbreak, right? Those are...
Yeah.
All of them can do that.
Right. Right, yeah. That's just sort of the playing off the basic... actions that the class gets is when, and it has this basically it's like you cast a spell and then you spend an action to sort of transfer that magic into a piece of tech gear. A tech gear works a little bit better depending on what kind of tech gear it is and what your programming language is. And then you can also take that gear after you finish overclocking it and use that to jailbreak a spell shape basically. And use that in weird ways. And it's basically like, hey, you know, you get a free action to. This is at third level when you get jailbreak spell, to do a spell shape without spending the extra action that a spell shape would normally require. So that's pretty big.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, each of them are kind of related to whatever the main language is, you know. So it's kind of yeah. So additional spell, get a hack. So do you know what jailbreak actually means?
As you have to. Something about making it more compatible again, or something about taking the normal operating the way it normally operates and changing it, right?
Yeah, it's you know they talk about like jailbreaking an iPhone.
Right? Yeah.
In the context of Apple devices, refers to the process of removing software restrictions imposed by the Apple on the iOS. You know, allows you to gain root access and stuff. So when they talk about jailbreaking, this is like the super level of what you can do with your spells is kind of this notion.
It's hacking magic in a way, right? Yes. It's hacking the sort of fundamental stuff of magic, like removing the restrictions, like removing the restriction of having to spend an extra action to do a spell shape and doing it. And then also changing every spell shape that the class can take as a feat, class feat has an extra sort of jailbreak option. So when you use it, you get a little extra bonus and maybe a little bit, you know, if it's a range thing, you get a extra range, or if it's some other ones. What were some other ones I was thinking at? The incognito spell one lets you sort of do something tricky, big, an extra demoralized action in there, just sort of like definite extra action compression stuff.
Yeah, and it's just, I can't believe how many feats they got for these guys, too, coming out.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8.
I mean, this is almost like essentially, you know, enough for, I mean, we, you know, when you do a class playtest, you want to have enough sort of options in there. People can look at them, but this is practically the entire class. Like I know it's probably not going to be much more added unless the copy fit needs more room. Right.
Yeah. That's 50 feet, 50 feet that they're bringing in for the Technomancer, you know, as you're doing this. And it's just crazy how much they have with this. And on top of that, what they don't have, so they have feats. They don't have, there's no spells, though.
The magic hacks. Well, they're arcane. They use the arcane list.
Yeah, they just use the arcane. But there's going to be additional spells probably coming out as well, I would imagine.
Sure. Whatever book this is, we'll probably have some extra spells that kind of go along with the theme, right? But they have the focus spells are all in here. So each of the programming languages gets the initial focus spell, and then you got to take feats to get the other two, like you do with wizard, right? Or cleric, right? Mm-hmm. There's stuff in here, and in a way, like there's a lot of stuff that's familiar looking, signal boost is essentially reach spell.
Right.
And then there's like counterspell. Everyone, you know, we got to have that in there. So this is some stuff that cantrip expansion stuff that's almost de rigueur for a sort of a prepared spell casting class.
Right.
Right. And and then just sort of lots of spell shapes, which are super fun.
Yeah, I know. I just love all these feats that they have on here. You know, it's just I just don't remember so many feats for the Technomancer in first edition. When it first came out.
Well, there's always the problem with magic classes didn't have a lot of like feats that were sort of, for them.
Right.
Feats was always like bonus to damage or initiative or, you know, like it was just sort of like some standard stuff that you're like, whatever, I don't know what to do with this.
Yeah, probably over time they've developed more. Yeah. Yeah. I'm just thinking.
Yeah. But, you know, in the sort of second edition framework paradigm, every class has got to have its own sort of stuff. Feats wise, and this is got it in spades for sure. It is sort of fun, like that fourth level one, Alakablam, where you put the cast a spell from a spell gem and jam it into your gun as ammunition, which is kind of fun. It's you can't do that with a scroll in Pathfinder, nothing like that. You know, like that's this is sort of speaking to the thing that makes Starfinder kind of like its own deal. Even using the second edition language and the second edition chassis can do fun stuff that you just can't do in Pathfinder.
So I'm pretty stoked. I think it looks like a fully developed, even though this is the pretest, you know, this thing's been fully developed. And so any feedback that gets made will probably be, you know, is something grossly overpowered, underpowered, unclear, you know, those kind of things just to tighten it up. But it looks like, you know, the majority of the design work's been done and they're just laying it out for everybody to see. I mean, it's very extensive. Very extensive.
Yeah, yeah. I forgot what I was going to say. That's because of the playtest. I mean, the playtest is only about a month long.
Yeah, and pretty
runs
short.
Until my 30th, so it's a short one, but, you know, when you go into something short like that, you want to make sure that it's the class is pretty shored up. Has stuff people can really test and whatnot.
So in addition, so that's, you know, kind of the Technomancer playtest, and they have Raya in here and they give her background and everything. They also have Quig here with the background, with the mechanic.
Yeah.
And what's really cool. Oh, go ahead.
I just thought you might be about to say the same thing, but I thought it was interesting how they kind of switched up what kind of a mechanic he is.
Oh. Well, now I don't know.
Well, if you read the book, Quig used to be a drone mechanic. Quig was a drone mechanic, right?
Yes.
He had a drone named Scout, right?
Yeah.
And if Rita says he's no longer drunk, Quig Scout has been awakened, right?
Right, right. Okay, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And now he has a turret. So that right. is a new type of mechanic, which is turret type, turret mechanic. So
right, right. Okay, yeah. See, that's, this is where I was getting a little confused, because it alluded to the drone part, and then it was a companion. So they're saying, because I was trying to figure out, so do mechanics somehow get both of these eventually? But I didn't see where they could get both turrets and drones.
I don't think so. I don't know whether or not Scout is going to be like part of the pre-gen, or if it's just a sort right. of a...
Right, so the...
Something, yeah.
So basically, this background is making the transfer of him from being that to the turret. That confused me. That makes way more sense now. So reading that part.
It's possible... It's possible that, like, with the ability to, if they bring back SROs, were SROs in the Galaxy Guide? I can't quite remember. But something like that, you do that, you say, oh, we make Scout a pre-gen of his own, of their own, and make them, you know, so build them as an SRO something.
That would be
right?
fun. Yeah. No, that's cool. Anyway, so getting... Now we've kind of alluded to two of the flavors of mechanic out there, right?
Yes.
So we have three flavors. We have, so everybody gets an exocortex, right? And then you have either the drone, the turret, or the mine.
They Not call mime, it a mine.
Yeah. And they all have like kind of special things. So, you know, with the drone, it's real similar to how you share your actions with annual companions in Pathfinder 2nd Edition, basically.
Yeah.
So the drone has some programming it can do on its own, but if you give it an action, it can do a bit more kind of thing, right? So not that different than what Quig had before with Scout. But the new editions where you can deploy and explode mines. So those are a couple actions, you know. So deploy is 1 to 2 actions, and you can put smart mines or targeting mines out there. And then you can detonate those mines either as an action or trigger it as a reaction, like the creature leaves or does something special. That turret. And then you have a turret, which can have all different types of weapons mounted in it. So some, you think like a turret and a starship where you have weapon mounts, right? And it can have a chain gun, a disintegrator, a laser beam, a thunderclap, a volt thrower, or a zero emitter. You know, so basically they can do a whole variety of different types of damage.
It's wild. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, you know, for me, I just like the versatility of these. And, you know, like one of the things I read about the drone is that as part of your preparations every day, you fully repair your drone, even if it's been destroyed. You know, you're lugging this husk around with you, and you just tinker with it all night, and eventually it comes back and it is fully functional. You know,
so. I think that has a bit in common with like the inventor's robot innovation.
Yeah.
They have a sort of thing as well. Just, you know, it gets, you gotta have, cause it's part of your class. It does. You're going to be spending all your feats on it. You can't just necessarily well, I can't adventure for a week cause I have to rebuild my drone. No, you're such a good mechanic. You can just rebuild it in a day, or, you know, or maybe there's, I don't know if there's rules in there for like repairing it before.
Yeah.
There are some in the middle of the day, like we got to do some
special
stuff.
Things you can do with it. Yeah. Yes. But it's just repairing nice. It, simplifying it. You know, quite a bit compared to to before.
I can't quite remember. I think in first edition, the very first printing, it didn't tell you how much you repaired your drone when you spent the 10 minutes to in between fights to repair. It was like, you get to repair your drone. We never really said how much
repair.
So that had to get fixed in a lot of, I don't think it was, but
anyway, and you get a custom rig that allows you to, modify stuff, items on the fly, and that's a single action to modify it. And it gives you, right now, it starts with 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 things you can do. You can make grenades or weapons have a larger area of effect. So increase the radius, increase the area if it's a cone, or increase the length if it's a line. So kind of area effect. You can, there's a bunker buster one, again, a grenade or weapon, where it can bypass hardness, which hardness is such a tough thing in second edition that this is a really cool thing. And they talk about a raising weapon feature, which I'm guessing helps bypass hardness already. Yeah, so we can increase that. You can make a weapon non-lethal, swapping in dummy rounds just as an action, which I think is awesome. You can levitate with your armor. Again, this is a mod. You can do any of these mods as an action.
Yes, but it's important to remember that it only lasts for one round.
Yeah, for one round, right?
But still.
It's still bad. That's, you know, so cool to build a, you know, your weapons can have longer range. You could troubleshoot or recalibrate your drone, again, you know, to reduce the glitching on it if it, you know, somebody does a combat hack or something on it. So, but this is just so versatile.
That's
in the middle of combat, what you can do.
You can you can add so many extra things to that. And like you were talking about the turret, different types of weapons, that takes 10 minutes between fights to change up. And you gain the ability to switch them for briefly. You're like, this thing is doing cold damage. And this, you know, like frost monster comes in and like, shoot, I better change this. And you can just spend that action every round to just make it do fire damage or whatever. And then there's feats that sort of even let you do more different types of damage with the turret or more things, more sort of uses of the mod. It's just, I think the there's like a medic one that lets you basically... what is it? Mod? What do you get to mod? Analgesic. But I don't know. It's just you jam some, you know, put some more medical supplies up.
Yeah. Again, what's 50 feet?
Sorry.
No, go ahead.
No, I was going to kind of slightly move on a little bit because the feat that's right after that I thought was pretty interesting that they put in there is the multidisciplinary mechanic, which says, no, if you really want to be the mechanic who's actually like got a biotech turret, just sort of take this. It's kind of for flavor, but it also does, you know, you get some skill bonuses with it or whatever, but it does kind of like make things a little more wibbly.
Yeah, magitech, necrotech. Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, all types of kind of different techs. Yeah, this is just, I would never have thought of the turrets or mines, you know, that was completely not anything I'm thinking about. And, you know, it reminds me, you know, a little bit when they did in Starfinder Enhanced, when they did the mechanic mods, so you could have the armor prototype or the weapon prototype where they kind of added some additional things. The mechanic just seems like a good multi-talented DPS doer now, you know? I mean, in terms of build to get there and do damage, range damage in particular, is just like, in addition to being your engineer type, you know, do all your crafting and stuff, and it just so many things you can do. It just, I just love it. This is just crazy.
Yeah. You know?
So, anyway, there's so much information about it. It's just cloaking.
So
field.
What's your, go ahead.
No, go ahead. I'm just looking at,
I was just
going to cool
ask you what your first mechanic character is going to be, since you're so keen on this one.
Oh, you know, my first one is probably going to be a turret mechanic. Mm-hmm. The reason why is I could do mines, one of the two. So I'm a big fan of The Expanse TV series. And one of my favorite characters is Amos, who's the mechanic on there. But he's just like a badass with weapons. You know, he's their big damage dealer. Yeah, he goes out and fixes stuff and everything. So I would want to flavor the mine or the turret deployer, basically, you know, is him, you know, using heavy weapons and stuff and, you know, fixing stuff, but also, you know, taking care of business too.
Sure. Yeah. 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 If anyone out there plays Overwatch, the turret mechanic is very much like there's a character that does that. But he throws a turret out, and you can kind of stand behind it and hit it with a hammer to repair it as it's getting shot at, and just sort of tracks people and shoots them. You'll have to, in Starfinder, you'll have to use your own, you'll have to be good at firing yourself because you're using your own attack bonus, essentially, to fire the turret. But, you know, what the heck? You can be in two places at once, shooting different directions, or use the turret as cover if you're into that kind of thing.
But it's also their hit die is it's a D8, which is pretty good, and they get martial weapons as a proficiency. I thought I saw in here.
Yes, they do. They're trained in martial weapons. Yeah. I think this has got the where do these go? Expertise at 5th. I think this kind of falls in the close to the sort of like ranger, right. Martialness of it all.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Not a heavy weapon, heavy armor wearer, but
not a fighter, obviously. Because,
for Starfinder, where you have so much tech and equipment around starships, vehicles, you know, ranged attacks, I just think the mechanic is like just, I think every group should have a mechanic.
Well, I mean, when this comes out, I'm sure every group will.
I think this will be my first character. I'm going to make a mechanic.
Okay.
I'm not saying the Witch Warper isn't great that I'm playing in our playtest, but I'm way more excited about the mechanic than I am about
there you
the
go. There you go. There you go.
Oh, man. What about you? Of all
I don't make characters.
You don't?
No, really? I'm GM. I'm forever GM.
I know, but I am too, but I... Okay, and this is going to be a segue. So I've GM'd a lot of Starfinder, right? Mm-hmm. To the point where I have you know, dozens of characters, including 5 of them level 13 or above in Starfinder Society, and it's all because of GM credits mostly. So I like building characters.
John, I GM for the love of GMing. I don't need to do it for credits or different characters in Starfinder Society. I just like to GM for bringing joy to all of my players.
Well, I like to GM too, but I also like to make characters.
Well, I mean, if you want to make,
But speaking of Starfinder Society, so Alex did announce a couple of more things for when second edition Starfinder Society comes out, which will launch at Gen Con. A couple interesting things is that characters can be created at 1st, 3rd, 5th, or 7th level, so you don't have to start characters at level 1, which means that for almost any game that's being played, you can make a brand new character of your own, not have to use a pre-gen, and play it at that level. I think is going to be appealing to a lot of folks who don't want to just have to go through the grind of going from 1 through 6 to get to cool stuff at 7 or whatever, right?
Yeah, maybe they've been playing a lot of Starfinder Society already or Starfinder Society through the playtest and just be like,
I don't have to start. They might have been just playing Adventure Paths and not getting Starfinder credit, and so they're really versed and like, oh man, I can't wait to... Oh, wait a second. I can start at level 1? No. You know, so that's kind of a cool thing, right?
Cool.
One of the trade-offs with that, though, is that they're going to have a level cap on adventures at 10th level. They're not going to create any ventures designed for characters above 10th level. Now, in part, and this is something I learned a couple years ago when they capped one of the specials at Gen Con, where they launched it at 8th level, Starfinder, the annual special at 8th levels, because majority of players play in levels 1 through 8. There's a lot of power users like me that just have tons of credit and build really high level characters, but we have a lot of people playing at lower levels, so they're going to be able to build a lot more lower level scenarios, make it easier for a lot of new people to come in. But I also expect, though, that if people want to continue to go higher, we're going to see more higher level adventures and adventure paths. Now, I don't know. This is purely speculation. But if people say, hey, wow, you know, I got to level 10. I'm really excited about this. well, how about if we go play this adventure path that goes from 10 to 20 kind of thing? I like that way a lot for leveling a character, because if you're playing society, oftentimes you'll play with a different group each week. Now, I had a regular groups that we played with for years together because we all showed up. But oftentimes you get somebody new in. Well, if you want to play together as a group at the higher levels where you all know what you're doing, you're experienced, well, an adventure path makes a bit more sense.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a neat thing. So those are two of the big announcements that that came out of this. Let's see. They're going to have as much published Starfinder content available from the various books. Yeah, that'll be sanctioned like right away at the launch kind of thing is what they're trying to do for society play. So all these cool things are released in the books. Yeah, you can play in society, because that's one of the things that always kind of stunk, where, oh, we have these five books, but they aren't sanctioned for 6 months or whatever.
Right.
Now, they've been a lot better about that. It's like as soon as it, you know, kind of hit the publishers, things got going. So it was pretty cool. But yeah, so there's some interesting changes, and we're going to see. There's two more things. There's adventure rewards coming the 29th, and then May 6th, they're going to talk about the year one storyline, which I'm super excited about. So,
all right,
be really setting things up. Yeah, so a lot of cool stuff. And hopefully when Ron gets back, we'll talk a little. I know he did look at the playtest as well. So we can get his impressions on that. And then maybe from that for next time, take a deep dive into the Galaxy Guide.
Galaxy Guide, yes. So. I went and looked at it real quick. The SRO is not one of the ancestries in Galaxy Guide. So the SRO might be coming up if we're going to do it at all.
Could be in something else. Yeah, it could be setting up something new, and maybe even in whatever book those two classes come out.
That would make sense, wouldn't it?
Because you wouldn't put that narrative that Quig knew had a new companion if maybe you weren't going to do something with that. You know, that's definitely foreshadowing.
maybe it'll be, you know, like something more in the some other bits, you know.
Yeah. Could be in an adventure that we run into. Yeah, exactly. We meet Quig and his now sentient companion.
And you've got to kill them both.
No, we learned the history behind it. Right. As they help us, you know, save the world or save the galaxy.
Quig's my boy. You know Quig's my boy, right? By the way.
No. Why is Quig your boy?
Well, Quig, I wrote his backstory.
I did not know that. You wrote this new backstory?
And I didn't write this one. Oh, I wrote his original backstory where he grows up on the ice farms in Akaton and gets this sort of like tinkering with stuff and meets a bounty hunter who turns him on to the bounty hunting life, basically. And I think that bounty hunter does appear in, where? She comes back at some point. She's there at some point in something, in like a book or I think maybe in a comic book. Maybe we see her a little bit.
Oh, yeah. It might be in the
the
graphic novels.
Yeah, one of the graphic novels.
That.
Yeah. So cool to see that. Always cool to see them grow and blossom.
But nobody talked to you about this new storyline of Quig's, though.
I don't work with Starfinder anymore. It's not my call. Well, it's fine.
It could be a courtesy thing.
Yeah, it's fine.
Okay.
No one. Yeah. I mean, look, there's a lot of other people. Like, maybe the only one. Well, some of the later iconics were created by people who are still around. But some of those original people aren't still around anymore. So I can understand.
Yeah, it's one of the originals. Wow.
Yeah.
Very good.
Yeah.
So do you miss it? Do you miss Starfinder?
I get to talk to Starfinder every 2 weeks and play it every 2 weeks.
Okay, that's good enough.
There's nothing to miss. There's nothing to miss anymore.
But you're not designing it, though.
Hey, I might be writing. I might be working on other stuff in my spare time. You don't know.
All right. Fair enough. Well, Jason, as always, this has been a pleasure.
A blast. Off to space.
Gosh,
that's our new sign off. That's our new sign off now.
Okay, that's pretty janky. I don't know.
Okay, I'll work on it. I'll go and work on it.
All right. Well, I'm John.
And I'm Jason. And this has been Digital Divination.